With God's help, we can and will resolve the problems which now confront us.
You may be seated. On behalf of a grateful nation, let me say to you, as the pastor of Solace Church, all those who have served in our military, thank you for your service. Our nation is grateful. Our nation is so blessed to have such brave men and women who are willing to lay down their life for our freedom. So on behalf of a grateful nation, on behalf of a grateful church, today we celebrate you on this Veterans Day. Let's give them a hand clap today. Well, we're excited to be in the middle of this series called God and Country. And before we dive into week two of this series, let me let you know of a couple of things. First of all, if you're a guest visiting with us, we cannot be more honored that you chose to come today. We absolutely recognize that you could be anywhere else on planet Earth, but you chose to come here today to be with us. So thank you for making that decision. We're the ones who are honored by your presence. We hope you experience God more than anything else. We hope you encounter a very real God today. This is week two of our series called God and Country. And it was an incredible privilege to have with us last week Dr. Phil Smith, who is a professor at TCC, and he shared with us some, I think, very, very, very great information about our founding fathers. For instance, it was powerful for me to hear that 53 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were active in their local churches. They were Christ followers. And that the other three were at least deists. They believed in God. It was powerful to me to hear, for instance, that 37 of the 39 signers of the Constitution were Christians, were Christ followers, active in their local churches. And again, the other two were deists who believed in God. In other words, every single signer of the Constitution and every single signer of the Declaration of Independence believed in God. There were no atheists and no agnostics who signed our founding documents. You can clap for that. It's all right. It's also remarkable for me to hear that 95% of the entire population during the time of the signing of the Constitution, 95% of the population in America were Christ followers, Christians who were involved in their local churches. And we learned last week that the other a few percentages would be Jewish, maybe in nature, and a few others. But what's remarkable to me as I think about these staggering numbers is how critical the role of Christianity was in the founding of our nation. Friday, I had the chance to go to the Gilchrist Museum. I hadn't been there in quite some time. And it was really powerful to me to go into the Gilchrist Museum to see what they had on display there this last Friday. On display in the Gilchrist Museum was the Bible that George Washington had when he took his first inauguration as president. It was a huge Bible. I don't know if you saw anything on the news about it. It was a huge Bible, very, very thick. It was one of those Bibles that most of you may have like on some table in your house just sitting there. It's a giant Bible. It was opened up to Genesis. It was really, really old and really, really powerful to be in that room. There were guards everywhere. There were people everywhere. It was really, really amazing to see that. And I was struck by something that I heard from Dr. Phil Smith when I was in the back room with him in between services. We were talking about George Washington, and we were talking about his inauguration and this Bible that was going to be on display here in Tulsa. And he reminded me of something that I had at least forgotten, maybe not, never heard this before. But he said to me, "Matt, do you realize that George Washington was not required by law or code or policy or procedure to have the Bible included in his inauguration? He chose to set that precedent for every president to follow, that they would place a hand on the Bible and they would swear by God's help to fulfill their obligations as the chief executive officer." How powerful is that, that our first president thought so much of the Bible that he wanted to include it in its first inauguration. As I said before, there is little doubt to me that Christianity played a critical role in the founding of our nation. It was so pervasive and so influential that it found its way into One of the most powerful documents man has ever known, of course, next to Scripture. The Declaration of Independence. That document that stated the reasons why the United States was going to form its own nation and free itself from oppressive government. I want to read to you just the first part of this. And by the way, my teenagers, young adults here, my prayer is that you've seen this in school. If you haven't read this lately in school, I hope this isn't the first time you've seen the Declaration of Independence. But this is what it says. In the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind require that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. In other words, they're establishing this reason why they have to leave. But they're established a founding truth. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Now notice what those rights are. Think about the Christian tenets. These rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Church, this is the founding tenets of Christianity. Jesus said that he had come that we might have life and have it more abundantly. It's life and the pursuit of happiness. And what did Jesus himself who said that I've come to set men free? And if the Son has set you free, then you are free indeed. It is the very basics, or the basis of Judeo-Christianity, that we have life and liberty in the pursuit of happiness. And so it's powerful to me to know that Christianity was so influential in the founding of this nation that our documents, which are our founding documents, chose to include these tenets. There was a French political philosopher, his name was Alexis de Tocqueville, who was so amazed by what was going on in the United States of America that he purposed to come and see for himself what made America great. In 1831, he traveled around the United States as it was in those days, from towns to villages, talking with people, intersecting with culture and society, and he found some incredible things. He was so amazed by what he found that he chose to write a book called Democracy in America. He published that book in 1835. And I want to read to you some excerpts from Alexis de Tocqueville's book, Democracy in America. Just listen to what he noticed about the church. On my arrival in the United States, the religious aspect of the country was the first thing that struck my attention. And the longer I stayed there, the more I perceived the great political consequences resulting from this new state of things. Religion in America takes no direct part in the government of society, but it must be regarded as the first of their political institutions. I do not know whether all Americans have a sincere faith in their religion, for who can search the human heart? But I am certain that they hold it to be indispensable to the maintenance of republican institutions. This opinion is not peculiar to a class of citizens or to a party, but it belongs to the whole nation and every rank of society. He goes on to say that the sects or the different denominations that we talked about last week that exist in the United States are innumerable. They all differ in respect to the worship which is due the Creator, but they all agree in respect to the duties which are due from man to man. Each sect adores the deity in its own peculiar manner, but all sects preach the same moral law in the name of God. All the denominations of the United States are comprised within the great unity of Christianity, and Christian morality is everywhere the same. Now listen to this. There is no country in the world where the Christian religion retains a greater influence over the souls of man than in America. But his most famous quote from the book Democracy in America is one that most of you have probably heard. And this is what he said. I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her commodious harbors and her ample rivers, and it was not there. In her fertile fields and boundless prairies, and it was not there. In her rich mines and in her vast world commerce, and it was not there. Not until I went to the churches of America and heard her pulpits aflame with righteousness did I understand the secret of her genius and power. America is great because she is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great. The church formed the foundational morality for the nation. Now, I want to say this to you today, church. I embrace the separation of church and state. I think it's very dangerous for the church to intermingle and intertwine itself with governmental authorities. I'm perfectly okay with the fact that the church is separate from the government. Matter of fact, I think Christianity itself doesn't fit in a government that mandates Christianity. Isn't Christianity an invitation to come experience God in a relationship? You can't force that. The problem is not separation of church and state. The problem is when man removes all awareness of God completely. Alexis de Tocqueville was very concerned that if America chose to remove the moral fabric and foundation of this nation, that America would struggle to continue to be great. He understood this principle that all of us need to understand as well. He understood that there is a direct link to a representative republic or democracy in which we enjoy. The liberty that's the inalienable right, there's a direct link to liberty and morality. This is the way he said it. Liberty cannot be established without morality, nor morality without faith. Isn't that good? If a people would choose to be free people, then they must have a moral compass that guides them. Because you cannot have freedom without some basis of morality. If people are free to do whatever they want, and they are depraved of a moral foundation, then they will run reckless and be self-destructive. Liberty, morality, and faith are all a part of what made America great in its beginnings. As a matter of fact, here's the truth. If you want to have liberty, but you remove the moral fabric, the moral foundation, or the moral compass of a nation, then the only way to maintain some level of liberty and the only way to find some level of morality is to pass a whole bunch of laws. As a matter of fact, the less moral a nation becomes, the more legislation from houses of Congress is required. Because you must legislate how people act rather than allowing them to be free with the moral compass that guides them. This is what Alexis de Tocqueville was very concerned about as he witnessed the greatness of America. Fast forward some 200 years. Where are we today? It's remarkable to me to see how right he was. We live in a society today that is living proof of what this principle teaches us. Liberty, morality, and faith all go hand in hand. I believe it was John Maxwell who first coined the idea that there are seven streams of influence which affect a culture and a nation. I want you to think about these streams of influence, and I want you to think about how many of them are engaged in an all-out assault on the moral foundation of our nation. These are the seven streams of influence according to John Maxwell: the family, the church, the business, government, education, creative arts, and media. Those are the seven streams of influence in a culture. These streams of influence have the ability to mold and shape a generation, to have a worldview that eventually becomes the law of the land in any given nation. I would suggest to you today that four of those seven streams of influence have purposed an all-out assault upon the Christian foundation, the morality that comes from the Bible, from His Word, that the founders and the vast majority of people living in the days of the founding of the nation embraced. So let's spend a little bit of time this morning talking about these streams of influence and how they're engaged in this all-out assault. I would say to you that there is a four-pronged attack. So of these seven streams of influences, there's four-pronged attack, or four streams that are engaging in an all-out effort to destroy the Christian influence in this nation. Let me begin with the academia or the educational piece of this. In the educational stream of influence, we have an educational system or the academia that is engaged, I believe, in an effort to rewrite the history of America. I listened to a talk about the person and work of Alexis de Tocqueville. And I listened to an individual describe, it was a professor in a college, describe the greatness of what Alexis de Tocqueville had to say. I listened to the entire presentation on his life, and not once did he mention any of the quotes that I read to you from Democracy in America. Here's the way he said it. He said Alexis de Tocqueville was so amazed at the ability of Americans to group together in affinity. That's right. It's called the local church. You missed it. Why would you choose to not include that truth? Because if you can begin to teach people that it's just simply some secular gatherings and not truly the church making a difference, you can rewrite history, teach in our colleges that Christianity had nothing to do with the founding, but rather it was a bunch of deists who just simply believed in some kind of God that just simply exists out somewhere and is observing humanity. If you can convince people that's true, then you remove Christianity from the center and you marginalize it, making it irrelevant in a society. That's what's taking place right now in our colleges across America. And I would suggest to you, church, today, that it's taking place in many of our public schools at the high school level as well. Let me give you one such instance. It's minor. It's a micro issue that deals with a macro issue, a macro problem in our society. I read a story online that a school in Florida has had a chaplain in their football team for years and years. For decades, even generation or so. And this chaplain was very engaged with the team, and he would come and pray before games, and he would be interacting with the students, and he was available for them if they needed him. And if I understand the story right, it was this year that they made the decision. The school in Florida made the decision to remove the idea of chaplain and replace it with the word life coach. Now, why would you choose to do that? Because chaplain is attached to Christianity. Life coach is a secular word that anyone can embrace for some motivational speaking. It's the systematic removal of God from the educational systems. Because these individuals understand that if we can erase God and Christianity from our founding ideas and ideals, then we can remake America into something that it was never intended to be in the first place. The educational system, I believe, in many respects, finds itself trying to erase the roots of Christianity. I think this is true in the scientific community as well. It's amazing to me the percentage of atheists and agnostics in the scientific community. And I would suggest to you that there's a very real agenda in the scientific community to try to marginalize the need for God. And this is the way it goes. Listen, science now can give us the answers to what happened in the beginnings. They can take us all the way back, and they say, to the Big Bang some billions of years ago, 13 or 15 billions of years ago. And now they have the answers to the reason the universe came into existence. And they have the answer now to explain how all of us got here today at Solace Church in 2014. It was this little bitty cell. Who knows how it came to life, but this little bitty cell came to life and created all of us through a long process of evolution, through random chance and natural selection. And that's how you got here today. This is the agenda. This is the theme. This is the worldview of much of the scientific community. Now, they believe that if science can answer life's questions, then there is no need for God any longer. Here's the problem. Science cannot answer philosophical questions. Science can answer questions as to observing how things work. But there's no way that science can tell us why the universe came into existence in the first place. It can just simply talk about how it happened. The scientific community wants to do away with the idea of God, therefore doing away with the need for a nation under God. So we see this in the educational system. We also see this in the media. In our society today, we live in a very diverse nation. You have Fox News, and you have CNN and MSNBC, and then you have this incredible online community of bloggers and the Huffington Post and every other website you can imagine. They're all promoting agendas, no doubt about that. And I don't want to slant this so far to the media that there's no one in the media promoting any kind of values that the church might embrace. But here's the truth. There is a large segment of the media that has a very anti-Christian perspective. And there's an agenda to marginalize the Christian church. Do you know right now that many of the commercials that you're going to see are going to say happy holidays? Dude, we're celebrating the birth of Jesus. That's why we're doing it in the first place. It's Merry Christmas. It's about Christ. But if they have to include Merry Christmas and they have to recognize Christ in the midst of this and our Christian heritage, and by no means do they want to do this. See this going on in our media as well. We also see this in government, in the political arena. We see an all-out assault in many aspects on Christianity. So here, let's have a little fun this morning. Here's the thing. Tuesday was an interesting day, wasn't it? If you're a Republican, it was one of the best days of the year. If you're a Democrat, you're depressed. If you vote independent, then you still feel irrelevant. Like, why did I vote? If you're a Libertarian or Green Party, you're wondering why you showed up at all. You're like, what am I doing, right? That's the nature of this incredible political machine that exists in this world. But there is a political agenda out there to remove or to marginalize the Christian heritage of our nation. There are politicians who are actively seeking to pass laws that are absolutely counter and contrary to the very moral foundation which made this nation great in the first place. Hear me. We've killed millions and millions and millions of unborn children, and we call it okay because politicians passed a law that said it was okay. It's not okay. It's the death of someone who is alive in the most precious place on planet Earth, the mother's womb. And it ought to be protected. We're seeing today that states are, and I blame part of this on our society and the moral decline in our families as well, but we see that homosexuality is now being promoted as okay. Here's the deal. It's not. Same-sex marriage is completely against the moral foundation that made this nation great. And I know that's uncomfortable in our society today. And I preached an entire message on this. And so if that's offensive to you, go listen to the whole message. Here's the deal. The church needs to do a great job loving people right where they're at. But the church needs to do a great job also promoting the truth of what God's word says. And we see this all-out assault on the moral foundations that made this nation great. I don't know if you saw the story about the mayor of Houston. I think her name's Anissa Parker. Who was openly gay, and in Houston they were passing this hero act or this hero law. Had a very pro-homosexual movement. I think even part of it, if I remember the story right, was they were going to do away with gender bathrooms. Church, there's a difference between a man and a woman, and we shouldn't try to mix that or mess that up. There is a unique physiological difference. There were pastors in the Houston community that stood in opposition. They encouraged their people to sign petitions to put this hero act on the ballot, and through a series of events and promotions, thousands and thousands of people signed this petition. And then the government came back, the city of Houston came back and said that many of the signatures were not valid, and so they tried to erase this petition to put it on the ballot. Bottom line is, it came to a point where the mayor of Houston demanded that the pastors who were involved in this turn over all of their sermons that had anything to do with homosexuality or anything to do with gender assignment, anything to do with this hero act, because she wanted to look at all of this information. Bottom line is, they were trying to bully these pastors into being fearful of speaking out on the reality and the truth of what's going on in their communities. Now, I'm thankful for the actions of many organizations who help kind of cause the mayor and her team to do away with this pursuit of this information. But it's the reality of the world we're living in. We see the judicial system doing this as well. I'll be quick on this, but we see judicial activism running rampant in our society. Here's the deal, all right? The judicial wing of the federal government is not tasked with passing laws. That's the Congress that has the privilege of doing that. And judicial activism, trying to pass laws or legislate through the bench, is completely unfounded in the original ideas and ideals of our founding fathers. We see this taking place in the judicial courts all across the nation. We know that the appeals courts at this point unanimously said that, as unconstitutional, the state's laws that said homosexual marriages were banned and that heterosexual marriages would be embraced. We see that the Circuit Court of Appeals, all of them rejected the state's rights to pass that law, and we were hoping that the Supreme Court would take that up. They had not at this point, but we see this taking place in the judicial system as well. What about the Creative Arts Department? I don't know if you know this or not, but Hollywood is not a fan of the church. That's surprising to anyone this morning. It's interesting to me that Christians are presented in most sitcoms today as the bigots, the sexist, the ignorant, the mean. While homosexual singles or couples are presented as charming and smart and flattering and intelligent and the heroes of the show, that's not by accident. It is an all-out assault on the Christian fabric and foundation of our nation. Let me just whistle you a song to take you back in time. It's not always been this way. It's not always been this way. We're up against a very critical time in our nation's history. And so these streams of influence, these arenas, I believe, are purposefully seeking to destroy the Christian foundation that made this nation great. And here's what I want you to know about it today. We should not be surprised that this all-out assault is taking place. Actually, I'm shocked, as I become a student of history myself, I'm shocked that it took this long. Jesus prophesied to his disciples that this day would come. And it's been taking place in other nations and other communities for thousands and thousands of years. And here in the last several generations, maybe a generation since the 60s and 70s, we see this all-out assault and affront on the Christian church. But Jesus predicted that this would be the case a long time before it ever hit America. In John chapter 15, Jesus, speaking to his disciples in one of the last times he'll have the opportunity to speak to his disciples while he's here on earth before his crucifixion, stated this to them in John 15, verses 18 through 25. This is what he says: "If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first." He goes on to say that if you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That's why the world hates you. Remember the words I spoke to you. Think about this, church. No servant is greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they rejected Jesus and his teachings in the first century, it should be no surprise to the Christian church that the world will reject his teachings as well. Because the worldview of the world is completely polar opposite than the worldview that comes through Christ. And not only is it completely opposite, it is a major threat to the worldview of secularism and naturalism. So Christianity in the world cannot be just marginalized. It must be erased. And this is the world we live in. So here we are today with this clear picture of the world in which we live. I recognize today there's some hyperbole attached to this message. Is the sky falling? No. Some would argue, and as a non-political entity like Solace Church is, we don't have a dog in the hunt. But some would argue that the nation has a chance now to return to some of the incredible principles that made this nation great in the first place. I hope we do. As a matter of fact, I'm very optimistic about the future of America. I recognize that there are some who have just simply given up hope that America will once again return to the Christian foundation that made it great in the first place. But I'm very optimistic. But here's what I want you to know today, church, as your pastor. Many people wonder, what can I do in the midst of this world in which we're living in, where two worldviews are completely opposed to one another? We are becoming a more secular nation, but yet Christianity is still very much a part of our society. What do you do in the midst of that? Let me tell you what you do. You get engaged. You, me, we get engaged. There is a huge misnomer that exists in the church. And this is the way it goes. Well, Christians are called to be peacemakers. Therefore, we must sit on the sidelines and allow ourselves to be beaten up along the way. Bull. Jesus never, ever practiced this. He went to the temple and turned over some tables. He spoke to the religious leaders of his day that were in error, and he engaged them right where they're at. Do you know that Jesus sent the disciples out into the very secular world in which they existed to go be salt and light? Do you know that he gave them this word, be wise as serpents and harmless as a dove? That is, go engage people in the arena of the intellectual ideas and the worldviews in which they hold, and pierce the darkness with the truth that comes from Christ himself. You go into the world and you make a difference by being harmless, that is, not mean or not rude and not overbearing, but wise. So let me ask you some questions today. This is going to get awkward. How engaged are you? Did you vote Tuesday? Did you, 18 plus years of age, did you take the time to go to the polling place and vote? I was incredibly honored that our church had the opportunity now to host one of the polling places here in the Tulsa area. So amazing to me to see that happen. I'm not sure how that works on the separation of church and state. But I'm thankful that we had the opportunity to host the opportunity for people to vote. Did you vote? Samuel Adams, one of our founding fathers who we learned about last week. I was laughing last week when I heard the founding father, Samuel Adams. I was laughing. I thought most people in the room today know that as some beer. Oh, he was a founder? Oh. Thought he was a logger. I don't have any idea. No clue. This is what he said. What a powerful statement. He, therefore, is the truest friend to the liberty of his country who tries most to promote its virtue, and who, so far as his power and influence extend, will not suffer a man to be chosen into any office of power and trust who is not a wise and virtuous man. And you do that through voting. Let me ask you another question. Do you know the real story of the founding of the nation? I didn't put this quote in here, but Alex de Tocqueville said this. He said that when he walked through the villages and towns, that he recognized that to a person, everyone knew the reason the United States of America came into existence in the first place. And they understood American history, and they understood the greatness of the Christian religion and the morality that comes from it. To a person, everyone could tell you that. He said it was very rare to find a person who did not know about the reason America was great in the first place. And to find someone that was completely ignorant of the founding of the nation was a phenomenon, he said. It just wasn't there. They all knew. Do you know? I don't know if you watch Waters World, but Waters World on Bill O'Reilly and the Fox News Channel causes me great pause as I listen to him go to college campuses and to the beach and ask questions about our founding. And some of the most basic questions cannot be answered by our 20-somethings. Do you know about the founding? Let me ask you this question. Are you paying attention to what your children are being taught? Are you following up with them? Do you understand the curriculum that they're being taught? Are you engaged in their education? I don't know what you feel about Rush Limbaugh. Some people love him. Some people hate him. He's got 12 or 20 million people that follow him. A lot of people like him. I don't care about his political persuasion right now, but he wrote some really powerful books. It's called Rush Revere, and these books are written for students who are probably fourth, fifth, and sixth grade up to seventh, eighth, or ninth grade. They're easy to read. They're great stories that tell about the true founding of our nation, from the pilgrims to the founding fathers and others. It's great. Are you paying attention? Are you engaged in what they're learning? Let me ask you this. Are you paying attention to current events? I don't care if you like Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, NBC, CBS. I don't care what your affiliation is, what news channel. Are you paying attention? All right, 20-somethings, real quick, and I got to hurry. Call of Duty and World of Warcraft will not teach you about the greatness of this nation. It's not there. Be a student. Know what's going on. Last thing I would say to you and ask from you this morning as we're done, have you yourself embraced the moral foundation that comes from the Bible? Have you made it a priority in your home that God's word is the foundational moral fabric that holds your family together? How engaged are you? I'll leave you with this quote. Edmund Burke, who is an Irish political philosopher living in the 1800s, said this, and I'm done. The only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. Come on with me. All is not lost. We can still win and return a nation to its roots if you as a citizen and me as a citizen will wake up together. Let's bow our heads and close our eyes.
Hey, this is Pastor Matt Blair. Thank you so much for taking time to check out our podcast today at solidchurch.com. You know, we realize that it's possible, as you listen to this message today, that God may have spoken to your heart about something. So if you made any kind of spiritual decision, we would love to know about that. You can email us at info@solidchurch.com and let us know what happened in your life today. Once again, thank you so much for taking time to check out this podcast.